The Broken Arrow, a traditional bow hunting podcast with your host, Schaefer Magnet and Chris Seacole. Brought to you by Black Widow Bows, Safari Tough, Great Northern Quivers, Addictive Archery, and Laurel Mountain Outfitters.
Was an embarrassing way to start it. At least it was Chris.
Starting over.
Oh, so much for easy editing.
Yeah, whatever.
You're making it hard.
So anyway, a couple people from South Carolina and a Vermonter are probably going to pick on me all night because I didn't go pig hunting.
Absolutely. That's pretty much the sole purpose.
I kind of felt set up, like judging by the podcast or the text messages throughout the day. I was like, well, I'm pretty much going to get beat up all night. This is going to be great.
Well, so
go ahead and just mute your microphone now.
On the way back from the pig hunt, my dad and I re-listened to Mark's episode, and that's when I realized that we said we were going to do a Mark and Newman episode after the pig hunt. So here we are doing the Mark and Newman episode.
Man of his word.
Of course, Chris is the only one wearing a yellow flannel.
I know. I thought, what happened to the yellow flannel thing tonight?
Yeah, sorry. I don't own one. I want one, but
I was thinking I didn't own one, and then I opened my closet, and I was like, hey, I got a yellow flannel. Look at that.
So I'm wearing it.
Yellow flannel's hung up where it's supposed to be.
I know. Yours is much nicer than mine, though. Mine's like an old, I don't know how old mine is, but it's old and rough looking, and yours looks really nice, the one you sent the picture of today.
Mark's actually got like a Superman closet, like Clark Kent.
Yeah,
just flannels.
It's a nice flannel.
The awkward part is when you unbutton the flannel. Is the yellow flannel underneath it? Like when he does his Superman thing?
I don't know.
It's okay, Chris. You're just a little blurry. The camera knows you didn't go pig hunting.
I quit.
I mean, he's not going to have a whole lot to say on this podcast.
No, I'm just here to listen.
He's going to be the question asker, probably.
Send it.
The interrogator. All right. You guys went pig hunting. How was it?
Who wants to roll first?
Was that good opening question?
Sure.
There you go.
I don't really recall what I said on the Brad and Phil episode as far as my hunt in itself.
We'll get over it. We'll
focus on those two because they had more stuff happen.
I'm sure we're going to have some crossover between the two episodes, but you guys had a good time because we're getting two episodes out of it. Brad and Phil's story was absolutely hilarious, and it sounded like that made me, if not the repetitive ball busting I got over the last couple weeks, didn't do it. Phil and Brad's stories definitely made me want to be there next year without a doubt. So I'm already planning on skipping certain events to be there to conserve on my vacation time. So I will be there next year.
I don't want to hear it's penciled in. I want to hear sharpied in.
I'm just wondering why it's the next year thing. You know, we can go like anytime.
My vacation's in. I'm sorry, guys. I am going to Sawmill. I am going to Etar. I'm not missing those two events. They're some of my favorite events that I get to see a certain amount of people that I will not miss those shooting my bow and sitting around a fire drinking beer with those people. Well, so I'm not missing those.
I will probably be down there at least once a month, all the way up till the next year, next PBS hunt. So anytime.
That and Foster did tell me that there's spiders the size of your hand. So I'm cool missing the summer months.
That is a true statement. Wow. I mean, you can't be weak and faint hearted down there in summertime.
When Foster dropped that ball on me, I was like, I'll wait till February. It's cool.
I mean, okay, the good news is they're like wolf spiders, which I've heard like they hurt when they bite, but they don't do a lot of damage.
Yeah,
we have those up here too.
Banana spiders, which just look crazy, but
we also have those up here. They're black with the yellow little spots.
Those are the big ones, right? The banana spiders.
They're like wiry though. They're yay big, but they're real like skinny legs and stuff.
Great description.
You're welcome.
Wikipedia stuff right there.
Yeah. My boss says I'm a good storyteller. So yeah, I'm pulling through. So anyway, I guess who got let's start at the beginning.
Mark started it all. So maybe we should let Mark go first.
This is what I'm getting at. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so it went just like every other Peebies hunt. Man, I got a thousand people saying, hey, I'm going to be there. And then by the end of it, maybe, I want to say 16 or 17 folks showed up.
How far out do you start talking to people about it?
6-7 months out.
Okay.
Something I was about like to say, that. I think the most I counted was 16, Mark.
Right. And then, so it should be also published in a magazine. So if they get the magazine, they should see, you should see it in a PBS magazine.
Yeah.
The dates are, I'll leave open, and then we just kind of work it in what we can. You know, we had 1,000 questions, 1,000 guys saying, hey, we're coming, we're not coming, whatever it turned out. But man, I couldn't ask for a better group of dudes that showed up. I mean, it was one of the best hunts that I've done. I mean, so that was probably hunt number, I think, let's just say it's hunt number 3, and by far, it was a blast. I think everybody got on pigs, at least seen pigs. Several shots were fired. And I had just as much time sitting around the campfire laughing as I did as hunting.
And you did get your pancakes eventually. So
yeah,
that's key.
We did eat some, we ate pretty good chow at night. My old bub and my buddy Redman took care of the chow.
We're still waiting on this catfish though, Mark.
Hey, that's never going to happen. I lie to people every time and say that. I just can't get around to do it.
So you guys had about 16, 17 people in camp. How'd you split it up during the day? Like who hunt? Like, did you guys kind of go your own ways? Did you split up in groups? I know Schaefer rolled with his dad and Phil and Brad did their thing. What'd you guys do?
Yeah. So I had Earl with me and I had Chris and my buddy Redman. Most y'all hear him talking about TJ, but I'm gonna call him Redman because that's the only thing I know him by. So that's who rolled me. And then Stuart from Canada pretty much rolled with me.
You mean Earl Cower from
yep,
Pennsylvania?
Main man himself.
Now we know who he can catch a ride with next year.
He had an absolute blast. Him and I have talked a few times since, and he is.
So he's going next year too?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I think he went and bought a truck just to go pig hunting.
He did.
I think he did. I think he's pretty much south of me, so I could probably pick him up on my way.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
I'm just looking for somebody to ride with because I know, and you know. But anyway, carry on. I'm just plotting. But next year.
We basically. I mean, everybody just kind of filtered in where they were, got in where you fit in. You know what I mean? Like everybody jumped in trucks and took off. And we all pretty much took off in certain directions. But throughout the day, we was all sharing intel through text messages on what we seen, what we didn't see, all that good stuff. And then
did you guys have one group text going around or did you have multiple?
There was probably a few.
There's okay. A few.
All right.
A few. But other than that, man, it was a lot of walking, a lot of just moving from area to area. You know, the swamp's big down there, so you got plenty of room to move around in. I don't know. It was a great time all around.
So, Mark, one question I wanted to ask is, was things more open than normal, or is that about on par?
No, things were definitely more open than normal.
Okay.
More open meaning less water?
No, more open meaning less available terrain to hunt.
Okay.
Things closed daily. And open daily.
Oh, okay. So they close areas for maneuvers and stuff, right?
Yeah. So for areas are closed and open every day for training.
Noted. All right.
That particular time frame is really good because of the access.
Okay.
As I was gonna say, there were some days where it seemed like absolutely everywhere was open, and I mean I had no idea what I was getting myself into in that way, but it was way easier than expected. So
yeah,
that was
nice. I try to tell everybody that's coming. I try to tell everybody exactly what to do, what not to do, how to maneuver the area, all that good stuff. And it seemed like everybody had a grasp on it.
Absolutely. Like you said, you know, once you do it for one day, it's real easy after that.
Right. But other than that, man, I think everybody just had all around good time. I mean, I really don't know what to say about it. It was hard hunting. It was not the easiest hunting. I've definitely been down there and seen more pigs. But we kind of knew that going into it because me and Newman both hunted the TBG hunt before that. So
same
we had
the same area,
same place.
Yeah.
Same area.
Yeah. Same area. So we knew, we knew going into it that it was going to be tough hunting. And I kind of started putting it out early. Hey, it's tough hunting, no acorns this year. I think had a lot of a big effect on it. But at the end of the day, there's thousands and thousands of acres, and there's pig sign on every bit of it. And you just got to get out and walk until you find pigs.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Big difference between that TBG hunt and then the PBS hunt was, if I remember right, I think the river level was like right around 7 or 8 feet on the TBG hunt. And it was, I think it peaked out at like 13 feet during the PBS hunt.
Yeah, much higher then. Okay.
Like significantly higher. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
water, so. What kind of food sources are you shooting? Are you shooting for acorns? I mean, like, what do they hone in on? I mean, I know nothing about pigs, so.
So, no. So, it's not so much because at that time of year, most of the acorns are gone. So, they're just basically going back and scrounging.
Just digging through the leaves.
Yeah, so just digging through the leaves. So, let's think of it like this. Big palmetto fields, big pine flats. Yeah. It's like a jungle, and you can't maneuver in it. It's a jungle. Head deep, chest deep, palmettos. As far as you can see. So you really can't, you can hear pigs out there, but you can't maneuver, do nothing with them. Now, let's just say there was acorns, then on the edges and in the oaks, where it's more open terrain, the pigs will be in there and you can maneuver and move on them. It's not that the oak tree is falling in, they're just back in there getting the scraps.
So, right. So were you like focusing on the thicker stuff? Is that where they kind of hold up?
not that hunt for me. I focused on what I was calling broom straw. And as this big, I'll send you a picture of it, but just big brown open fields, they just had a ton of pig sign around it. And I think they were just rooting in that broom straw.
Okay.
Yeah. I found like where that straw kind of where it was meeting the edges of, especially pines, that seemed to be where they were, especially talking to everybody else, that those seemed to be the areas that we were seeing most of them.
If it's an area that I can't shoot, and I say can't shoot, like can't see more than 15 yards, I don't personally like, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, you're not going to get that close.
Yeah, you can't kill them if you can't shoot them.
Right.
And you can walk through those palmetto flats and those big pine flats. It's, you know, a jungle. And yeah, you're going to hear pigs and you might even see pigs, but you're not going to kill pigs.
And if anybody doesn't know, like those little scrub palmettos are the absolute loudest possible things that you can walk through.
Yeah, the only thing I can compare them to is, you know, the plastic shades that lower down. If you were to fan those out and just like start wrapping them back and forth, that's a palmetto.
Like a blind.
Yeah.
The blinds. I had no idea that they were winding you. I think that came up in the last episode with Brad and Phil, but or that might have been with you, Mark, but I had no idea that they would use the wind.
Oh yeah, dude. Like
just an experience and like thinking of like pigs on farms and stuff. I just never even would have thought they would be sensitive to the wind.
Most of their faces and nose. So they use it.
Yeah. It makes sense. Like, but I guess I'm just naive and just being, you know, not experienced, but that blew my mind.
Yeah. Mark made the point about not being able to shoot.
Yeah.
While I was at the hunt early on, and the two pigs we got close to, that's exactly what happened. And all I could hear was Mark in the back of my head. There's no reason to keep chasing them if you can't shoot them. Because when we saw those two, they ran into some thick, nasty stuff. I'm like, well, right. I could spend 3 hours going the next 50 yards and wouldn't be worthwhile. So we kept going.
I'm still trying to convince myself of that because I'm stubborn and we'll just bust through it anyway.
Yeah, I'm done with that, man.
Newman, I learned that firsthand.
Yeah, we'll get into that later, but yeah, Schaefer saw my bulldozing ability.
Marines.
Marines was very fitting right there.
I understand. I mean, especially the guys who've never been there before or pig hunting before, is how much moving we were doing, and then how. Once you've seen pigs, how close are we, if you could stalk on them, that you could actually stalk them if you had the wind?
Yeah.
But then I think a lot of guys were, pigs never stopped moving. So shot opportunity, there was a lot of times where there should have been shot opportunities, but guys,
they didn't take them.
They didn't take them because it wasn't a good shot. It was the pigs moving, but pigs are always moving.
Where a lot of guys are waiting for them to sit still.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no Hollywood 3D like cordon way pig being steel. It doesn't work. Well, at least it does it for me, right?
You take the shot you get.
You take the shot you get. You get an arrow in them. It'd be as ethical as you can, but have faith in your equipment and put an arrow in one.
And your shot process.
They never stop moving. What's that?
I said, and your shot process.
Yeah. I mean, that is a process if you have one.
One thing that kept getting me while I was down there is my goal was to cover as much ground as I could when I was walking. And I look back and I wonder if there was any times I may have walked past pigs because I was moving too quick. I have a hard time believing I did, but that was definitely the goal. And that's one of the things I definitely look back and I wonder if I was going too, I don't want to say willy-nilly because it's not like
I've ever had. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there definitely could have been times where I've walked past them, especially where it's really thick. But I know there's been numerous times where I've been within like 15 yards of them and had no idea they were there. And then they blew out because I was getting right inside their, you know, red zone.
Bubble. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think that's probably more likely. Although I know, I think it was Jason. He's told me before too, that sometimes they'll just hunker down and, you know, if they know they're in really thick, good cover, they may not blow out. So I don't know.
Yep. That was I think that's one thing I found the most enjoyable about it is it was just cover ground. And then, you know, if you saw pigs, you saw pigs. It was, you do everything you can to find them versus you hope they walk by.
That's it right there. You're finding them.
Yeah.
You're moving.
That was extremely enjoyable to me.
So are you ruined?
Oh, for sure. 100%. Not even questioning it. I was talking to a guy at work the other day, and I had already told him that I would trade pig hunting for deer hunting, at least around here. And then he happened to be sitting at the lunchroom table with me at Friday, and a guy I hadn't seen since I had been back asked me how I liked it, and I made that same comment again. And he just looked at me, "Are you freaking kidding me? You would trade deer hunting for pig hunting?" I'm like, "I don't know what to tell you. It was a lot more enjoyable."
enjoyable because it's constantly changing and you're moving so much?
Yeah, and I had to tell him that for me, like, I've learned over the last few years that the quarry doesn't mean much to me. It's the how I'm going about it has a lot more to do with it.
So, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with it's like you are actively hunting.
Correct.
You know,
it feels natural.
You get up in your tree, right, and you're sitting there and you're waiting. Like, you're waiting. Yeah, that's a form of hunting, but it's kind of out of your hands at that point. Either you picked the right spot or you didn't, and either the wind's going to cooperate or it won't. But there's not a whole lot you can do about it unless you want to go find a new setup. But this, it's like minute to minute, you are making decisions, and you know, you are trying to outsmart these things that are out there. And it's, yeah. I mean, it's definitely more enjoyable to me.
I made a
movement to contact.
Yep.
Yeah.
I made a YouTube video once I got back, kind of going over the hunt. And the comment I made in that video was, I bet you it's pretty similar to how, like, the big woods bucks guys feel with rifles. Because they're actively tracking, actively doing what they can to find a buck. And I was like, I bet you it's pretty similar to that as far as why they enjoy doing that so much. It's just pigs. It's a different quarry, yeah, but similar concept in ways.
I think that also, I mean, if you bust a group out, go get in the truck, drive a half mile, and chase another group.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I think Earl seen. I think he said he's seen over 20 pigs.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get a shot or no?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll let him tell his stories.
Oh, but, hell, we should add Earl on tonight.
He definitely had his hands full.
Oh man, we should have had him on here with us tonight. That would have been fun. That's awesome. He got that. Is that his first time down there too?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Dang, that's awesome. That's cool.
Yeah. I think it's one of those you just don't know. Like, I've been out there and spent a full day and seen nothing. I spent a full day and not seen him until right at the very end. And then, you know, like, I think it was the first time down there, me and my son, we had one night where we were watching 50 plus, you know, so it really could just be anything, which is actually, you know, it makes it a little bit more exciting too, because you just never really know. And we saw pigs. I think we averaged probably 3 or 4 a day. And then on the last day we got on a group of like 10 or so. But you know, that's also I figured it up just looking at my watch, and then I clocked how much I drove one day. And I think we did, my son and I, we walked between 25 and 30 miles, and then we drove, I think, over 250 miles just like on the base.
I was about to say, we used 3/4 of a tank of gas driving. And that's roughly, we probably used 1/4 before we had to fill up, and then we used another half tank.
Dang.
And that was 3 days.
So the last pig I killed down there, I had 44 miles into it. And that's on foot.
So does it really come down to, like, you're going to just moving, covering as much ground as possible? Is that like the goal?
It does, but once you get inside 50 yards, you gotta have some skill.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, once you get, and I'm going to say not 50, once you get in 30, now, you know, and for us, that's, now we're just now getting close to, you know, getting close. But that last 30, for me personally, that last 30 yards is, you got to have skill to get inside that 30 yard range. And now you're getting after it.
I think that's one reason I want to go back so bad, is because I was so looking forward to doing that last, like you were saying, 50 to 30 yards and seeing how it went. And I haven't been able to do it yet. So, like, I am actively, like, I looked at my vacation time yesterday and it's not good. So still going to figure out how to get back down there. But, like,
yeah,
I got the itch to figure it out more.
I got a week left. I'm using that for whitetails, but I want to ask you guys, because both of you guys have killed pigs. How far were your shots, and what were the scenarios like? Was stalking in on them? Mark, go first.
Inside 15 yards, greatly inside 15 will greatly up your percentages.
How far away were you when you realized you were coming up in on some pigs, and how close were you able to stalk in on them?
All right, so I'll just, like, the last pig I killed down there, this is how it went down. I had to walk for 4 days. So let's say I was at 40 miles, and okay, I got in on pigs. And when I say I got in on pigs, I heard pigs in palmettos. I got the wind right, and I pushed in on them. At one point, I'm within 6 yards of 4 or 5 pigs. They have no clue I'm there. So I shot one at 6 yards. And then another one bounced around out there about 15 yards, and I shot that. So I basically shot 2 pigs. I only recovered one of those. I shot 2 pigs within 30 seconds or so inside of 15 yards. When you get into that window, though, you got to shoot. You know what I mean? You have to get in there and make a shot happen, because they don't stop moving. And they're usually, for me, they're always in some sort of thicket that I'm trying to shoot into or through.
So we know their scent is really good. How's their vision when you're knocking the second arrow?
Like, I hear different folks say they can't see. That's not me, right? What's PBSA? Knowledge through experience. Well, my experience is that those jokers can see.
Okay.
They see those Sasquatch standing over there trying to shoot them. You know what I mean? They know what's up.
Yeah, and what I found is if I think it's like with most prey animals, they're going to key off of movement. If you're dead still, you know, and you don't appear to be a threat, they may just look and then look down and go right about their business. I've had them do that to me a few times. But like you said, if you look like Big Sasquatch, if you look like something that maybe kind of possibly might be a threat, yeah, they're going to see it and they're going to recognize it. And, you know, it's just like anything else that you hunt. You know, that they're going to, if something makes them feel uneasy, then they're not going to like try it. You know, they're not going to like push their luck. And just hope that it's okay. So I don't know how well they see, but I know that especially, you know, if the wind is right, you got a little bit of leeway. And I know, like, I'm sure they can hear well, but I think because they make so much noise, I don't think they're as sensitive to other stuff making noise.
Right.
But if, like I said, if they see any kind of movement and it just doesn't seem right, then yeah, you're going to get pegged.
So real quick, Newman, how far, last pig you killed, how far away were you when you saw them, and how close did you get in, stalk in on them?
So it's, this is one we talked about it maybe a couple of podcasts ago. It's very different than Mark's last pig killed. I walked for, I think, 30 minutes. it was when we got out of the truck.
Sometimes it works out.
Now, well, and I'll warn anybody.
Sounds like turkeys.
It has now happened to me. It's now happened to me and my son. You know, the first one he shot, it was 10 minutes out of the truck, And it's like catching a damn fish on the first cast. Like, we have been in a dry spell since then. So, but no, we were walking and we had just waded through. It was like thigh deep swamp or so. And we got up to a little part where it was a little bit higher, and I heard something, and I looked up and I saw two huge pigs, and then they kind of scooted away. And then when everything kind of came like into focus, there were, I don't know, Mark, how many, maybe 10 plus other ones in that group?
They went everywhere. There's pigs everywhere.
Yeah. It was a big group of them. And I mean, I think as soon as I heard them and I put two and two together, I knocked an arrow. I think I took three steps forward, and then they were all moving from my right, like right to left. And there was one little window in between two like saplings where I said, all right, if one runs in there, I'm shooting. And, you know, all this took, it was like 3-4 seconds maybe. And one, it ran, stopped quartering to me, and it like looked right at me right when I released the arrow. And I just watched it go straight into its shoulder, and it ran 20 yards and tipped over.
Sick.
But it, I mean, it happens real quick.
Yeah, but the difference with that particular spot is what Newman knows or doesn't know, that was a honey hole that we had laid down four different hunts ahead of time. You know what I mean? Like, we knew the pigs were there.
It was absolutely a honey hole because we went back there, and every time I went back there, there were pigs there.
I mean, I had a debt I had to pay off, and I had to pay it off with a pig. So I had to put him on one quick.
Yeah, but I mean, I've had a few other instances where we hunted this past go around that were. I know there was a couple where there was, they were out in an open field and we tried to get as close as we could. And then they saw us from probably like 40 yards. I think we may have gotten maybe close to 30, and they took off. And as soon as they took off running, I winged an arrow at them. But I think on one of those two shots, I got like kind of close, which I was pretty proud of that I hit right behind it. And then I've had another instance where two sows were coming like straight to me. And one of them stopped at probably like 8 or so yards, but it was facing me and its head was kind of down. And I was not confident that my Zwicky was going to go through its skull. So I had to wait. And then it bolted and took off because it got right up to me. And then it looked at me and realized what I was. And
it took good. Off. Yeah.
See, now that one worked out where I saw him coming to me. And when she stopped and looked at me, I was at full draw. Like, I was ready to go. I mean, it was slow, you know, and I had all the time in the world, but I didn't have an angle to shoot. And all I could, like, as I'm at full draw, I just pictured my arrow just skipping off its forehead. So I was like, all right, I'm going to hold off on this one.
That's what happens every time you shoot one on a 3D target in the head. Right. It never sticks.
Yeah. I've had a few others that were, you know, obscured by a lot of brush, and I wasn't quite close enough to be confident the arrow was getting through. So, but I don't, for me, it's probably like 70-30, where 70% of the time, like, it's got to happen real quick. And maybe 30% of the time I have some time to kind of plan it out and let them come to me.
Gotcha.
That answer your questions, Chris?
I think so. What broadheads were you guys using?
I was using a Bear, a razor head with leader blades.
Okay.
And I had Zwicky Eskimos, and then I had some VPA 3 blades too.
Okay. Schaefer, what'd you roll with? You rolled with some Zwickys too, right?
That was the original plan. And then like a night or two before, I was playing around with various sharpening stuff.
Yeah.
And I had bought some of those razor single bevels. Yeah, they're a company out of Michigan, and I sharpened those, and I've never gotten a head so sharp, so I had those in the quiver.
Man, they all work.
Exactly.
They all work. It just, whatever you, like, I like a 4-blade, but some guys like 2 blades, but I've killed pigs with everything from a grizzly, like a narrow grizzly single bevel, to a big snuffer, to a big Magnus 1. Man, they all work. It just depends on who you talk to.
Dev sharp.
A story we're going to get to here in a little bit. It's Newman's story, but not to coattail it here. I did agree with him in one of his theories, so I have a feeling I'll be shooting 3 blades going forward.
Yeah, I'll bring that up.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you right now, I've never said, damn, I wish I had a smaller hole.
Right.
So, 4 blades, for me, like those Palmer Extremes, you ever seen those?
Yes. Yep. Those are the old Phantoms, right?
Yeah, or like a Zwicky Delta four blade,
yeah,
or the Eskimo, even Eskimo four. So going forward from this point on, I will always shoot, if possible, a four blade head. And that's just from my experiences in the last, we'll just say the last 2 years. Going back to that pig, the last pig I killed down there, I shot a single bubble grizzly right through one, and we never found a drop of blood. And that was in waist deep water, like knee deep water. The next pig I shot with a grizzly fell right over. So they all work. So don't think I'm saying they all don't work. Every one of them will work. But for me personally, I am shooting a four blade or the biggest three blade that I could find from here on out.
I mean, it's just like, you know, you talk about all the different blades, or even if you look at the compound side and you're talking about, you know, big wide mechanicals, it's all about just margin of error. You know, if I shoot a 1 inch wide single bevel, double bevel with two blades, you just have a smaller margin of error, you know, than with cutting something that's important, that's either going to let a lot of blood out or kill them quick. And so they absolutely will all do it. That one that I killed that we were just talking about was with a two blade Zwicky. And like I said, it ran 20 yards and tipped over, and it went right through the center of the shoulder. I think it either double lunged or top of the heart, you know, and that was it.
Excellent. So Newman, one story I definitely wanted to tell on here was the we'll get to the other story we were just talking about later, but my dad and I basically hunted by ourselves or together the whole time. But one evening we went out with Newman and Jack, and it got pretty fun for a little bit. It got a little, yeah. It never got Western, but it felt Western for a moment.
I tried to make it Western. Mark had his group of little satellites that were always going around with him in one particular area. And so Schaefer and I were like, yeah, let's find a different spot. I'm not going to go give him like 10 digit grid coordinates like Brad and Phil were doing, but we went and found a different spot. And, and it was pretty far away. We had to drive for a little while, and we got up there, and it was Mark, from your advice and the other guys, looking for broom grass and pines. And so we had found a few areas that had those, and we went into one big, wide open, huge area. I mean, like huge. And walked through it, saw old sign, kind of said, I don't know, Schaefer, what were we walking around for, maybe 20 minutes?
Yeah, probably.
Something like that. 20, 30 minutes, and then said, all right, you know, nothing's here. Let's head back to the truck. So we made our way back, and actually your dad covered a lot more ground than Jack and I did. We just kind of did a quick little loop, and you guys were like, you're like a quarter mile away from the trucks.
My dad brought up a good point. The pig we're going to eventually say you guys saw. My dad and I wondered if we pushed it closer to the road, because we were in the same set of woods. The one point I did want to bring up during this part of the story was my dad had mentioned that the guns sound a little louder where we were. And then he cut down one of the roads, so he wasn't back at the trucks, because I was going to pick him up on the way by, because the road he was walking down hit the road we were going to drive on. And then I get to Newman, and he makes the same comment, and then he mentioned something else about... I'll let you take over, Newman, but yeah. I just started cracking up because my dad had the same fear.
Well, down, you know, because anywhere on the base, you're going to hear him doing training. And typically, you're going to hear the 25 millimeter guns shooting, and just, you know, think big, quick firing cannon. Yeah, exactly. And we, like I said, we hear them all the time. But in this one area we were in, I mean, we were well like into the woods at this point, and we hear one doom, 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 and it was close. Like it was significantly closer than any of the ones we've heard before. So like I stopped for a second and I was listening. I knew where the gun was. Like I knew where they were shooting from. I was listening for the sound of the rounds to figure out which direction they were shooting. And I could hear them shooting basically, you know, like to the west from where we were. And I didn't hear him coming overhead. I was like, all right, we're good. You know, they're not shooting our direction, guys. Let's keep going. But it was a lot closer than they had been.
Yeah. And to give an idea, I mean, from where we were in the campground's like central south or south central on the base. It took us like an hour to get to where we were hunting from the campground. So like You can be
with me driving faster than you guys have been driving.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't quite Mark speed, but it definitely quicker. Well, Mark, it cracked when you ran into us in that one zone. My dad and I like backed up and then pulled out on the road, and you were just gone. And it's like, where could he have gone? I swear, like 15 seconds had passed, and it just poof.
Newman, you drive at Tacoma, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
And did you see Foster's pictures of his?
Pictures? No, I didn't.
Oh, he had buried pretty good. Jason came and pulled him out, thankfully.
So
I ran into Newman, and it did well the whole time we were there. But I was not trying anything because it is not worth getting stuck down there.
Oh, he definitely tried.
he tried very hard.
Yeah, it sounds like he did really well up until a certain point, but he definitely tried.
Well, you always do well till you get stuck.
They're just they're great trucks for that kind of. I'm sure it's kind of tight. And
so to make fun of Chris Moore for not going, this was one of my moments of I wish I had done something. So it was the last night of hunting. My dad and I got back a little earlier than we had been, and we ran into Foster. And I'm like, oh, I got to get a selfie with Foster and Newman and Mark, or at least some of them, and send it to Chris saying, see what you're missing? Got the whole crew here.
Did you get that photo?
I did not. No, I was bummed.
Yeah.
Hey, Foster texts me. He's like, where are you camping at? I was like, dude, I'm already out. I'm back in South Carolina.
Tell me about camp. Is everybody pretty much just intense? Anybody hammocking, doing that stuff, or what was camp like?
Various setup.
Yeah, everybody had various setup. I mean, everybody had. I didn't see no hammocks. Not this time.
No,
there was a guy who was over with Foster that had one set up that last night.
Yeah,
there you go. So pretty much tents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The campground's great, man. I don't think you can ask for a better deal.
No, Schaefer's an old man. He goes to bed at 8 o'clock. How was camp life?
It was great. I mean, so everybody got back. I mean, everybody almost gets back about the same time, 30, 40 minutes after dark. And what everybody does is everybody goes, eats chow, and then we'll have a big fire. There's just a community area in campsite one where there's four big pine trees, basically four benches around a campfire. And then it comes back and tells their hunt stories. And man, I've never laughed so hard. Oh man. I laughed and giggled like a little girl for hours on end around there.
Awesome.
It's funny because especially you get a lot more of that from what I've now realized during these like winter and fall hunts, because in the summertime, if you're down there, people are getting back at 9:30, 9:45, 10 PM. And you just slam some food in your mouth and go to bed. But these where it gets dark earlier, you get a little bit more time. But I know, and I could tell this was kind of a, I don't know if Schaefer was expecting it or not, but you don't see anybody during the day. At least the group that we go with, like you're out there hunting the whole time and there's not a whole lot of hanging out around camp. So that last little bit around the campfire is kind of the one time for everybody to kind of catch up. And even then I know, like Emerald was one that was like always getting back pretty late. And there's a lot of guys that, they go down there to hunt, which is awesome. I love it about that.
I think we had that conversation, Newman, one night. It's like, you make all these plans to hang out, so to speak. And then you realize that it's, you talk real quick and go to bed.
Yeah.
That's what everybody's got to understand. I mean, like every time we've done these hunts, nobody hangs out. Like there's no, we hang out for a little bit, but there's no people sitting around a tech campfire at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? There's none of that. There's nothing. Everybody hunts hard, get some chow, sit around, tell hunt stories. And then before you know it, I'm like, hey, I'm out. I go to bed early too. I'm out. Yep. And then after that, everybody's gone. But at daylight, 30 minutes before daylight, you're hearing truck start. Yep. I mean, people getting up and getting after it.
That's awesome.
I brought my motion sticks specifically for Emra to shoot it because he wanted to try it out. And I never saw him when it was daylight. The only time I saw him, it was already dark outside. So Emra, when you listen to this, man, if you want me to send it to you, I'll mail it to you. You can shoot it for a while and just mail it back to me, because we were never able to get together on that.
Oh, that's good. But all right, well, I guess tangent back to the story of when we hunted together, Newman.
All right, so yeah, Schaefer and I met up in like the edge of the tree line. Again, we were hoping to see pigs, didn't see anything. So we're like, all right, let's head back to the trucks. We'll drive around. So we get back and get back on the main road. And I mean, 50 yards down the road, I'm driving and I'm lead vehicle. And I look over to my left, and this is exactly what went through my head. I said, oh, look, a pig. A pig! And there was a sow standing 15 to 20 yards off the side of the road. Just like, she looked like a 3D target. Just this perfectly black, completely broadside. Jack, my son, who had, you know, I rigged up this cool system where I can strap the bows into the bed of my truck. It's basically just two little snaps. It's not very fancy, but my bow is in the bed of the truck. His, he had brought inside the cab with him. So he hops out of the truck, grabs his bow, and he's running around. I think he ran behind the truck. Schaefer, did he run behind the truck? I don't know.
I was very perplexed at this point because literally, like,
it's like a near
my dad had walked to the tee, and you guys had stopped right as I stopped to pick him up. So I'm like, oh, they're stopping to, you know, give us time to get let my dad in the truck. And next thing you know, doors are flying open. I have no idea which way Jack went,
but
the door did not close on Jack's side, just smack dab in the middle of the road.
Yeah, no, I'm literally in the middle of the road. His door's wide open. I jump out. I grab my bow out of the back of the truck right as Jack was getting onto like the little berm that goes into where this pig was standing. And he was probably, it probably would have been like a 15-yard shot or so. And if I've got all the timing right in my head, as he was like getting ready to say, okay, like I'm about to shoot, and this pig is still standing there. Again, it looks like the Reinhardt 3D target. I grab the bow, I grab my car door, and I slam it. And like as that door is about to slam in my head, I'm like, no. And then boom, it slams. Pig takes off. And so we start going after it. Jack had seen kind of where it went, and it was all in that scrub palmetto. So again, like once it got 20 yards out, you couldn't see it because it was just high enough to pretty much cover it. And so I told him to follow where it went. I was going to loop around to the right and try and basically like outflank it. And so at this point, I think I looked over, Schaefer, and I saw you and your dad kind of like put two and two together and realized what we were doing.
At first, like in my head, when you guys started chasing, I'm like, oh, cool. They must be on a pig. I'm just like, I was just watching. Like, I'll just like, this is their chance. I'll let them have it. And then my dad's kind of like getting his stuff. I'm like, oh, I guess it does make sense that more people out there is better. Like, never know where the pig's going to go.
Well, that was the thing. Cause like, so we didn't see it again. And of course, like now I look back on it, I realized what this looked like. So I was like, okay, I'm going to outflank this thing, but I'm going to take off. And
I could think of a scene of a movie to describe Newman. Maybe, what is it? I'm trying to think of the movie.
Last
of the Mohicans or The Patriot, when they're freaking running through the woods. That was Newman out there with his orange vest just flying through the trees.
I started sprinting. And I was like, okay, I'm going to catch up to this thing and I'm going to push it towards Jack and Mark and Jack and Schaefer and his dad. And so that was the goal. I was like, I'm going to be just loud and fast and try and bump this thing back over to the left. And I don't know, I probably ran 70, 80 yards, something like that, and never saw it. And then I was hoping that maybe it was just kind of hunkered down where we were. And, you know, Schaefer and his dad and Jack kept pushing up and we were basically making our way back towards that field where we had stopped and we never saw it again. It must have squirted off to the right past where I was sprinting. But it was a good little bit of excitement and I'm still kicking myself for slamming my stupid car door. Cause Jack probably would have killed that thing. I would put money on it. If I had not done that and that thing bolted off, he probably would have killed it.
Some lessons are a little harder to learn.
Yeah. Right.
So that was
I blame that one on the Marines because like you never get out of the vehicle and leave the doors open. You always close your doors. So this is like, it's just in my head. I'm like, get out, you close the door. That's just what you do. Yeah, it was dumb.
Oh, so that was the first, I mean, that was basically the hunt for that night. Cause by then it was already starting to get dark. We drove a little further down the road and pushed through that last field. That's where you said,
yeah, what'd you learn about in that last field, Schaefer?
The louder the frogs get, the wetter it gets. I walked through one section, like, oh, that was wet. And then, like, as Newman said, you know, once he started hearing the frogs get louder, he knew it was going to be wet. So, like, I started pushing through, and it got wetter and wetter. I'm like, I'm just going to push through it. It's okay. And then eventually that wetness turned into, like, a pond. And that's when I decided to cut over. It seemed like a losing battle.
Yep.
That pond gator in it.
Could have.
Oh, it is. This field, I told them if it had been like middle of the day, there's no way I was walking through there without snake gators on. I didn't wear snake gators the entire hunt, but I would not have gone.
How dare you?
I know. Now, well, you know, you're around it enough. Like I said, there are certain conditions where I'm like, yep, I'm wearing them. And that week is just, I didn't feel it. But that field, it looked like Discovery Channel perfect for rattlesnakes.
There was the first morning we were in one unit and I was walking through it and it felt snaky. And even though it was late in the evening, that was probably the other time it felt really snaky to me.
Yeah, it definitely did in there.
Did you have any encounters?
Just Brad. I think Brad's the only one. Brad's the only one. Snake.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's the deal. What gets me, everybody talks about snakes, right? And everybody's wearing snake boots and snake this and do what makes you feel comfortable, right? I'm not against it. Whatever you want to do. But the same dudes, it's not like we didn't leave the swamp at the campground. Then you got guys walking all around in flip-flops and shorts and act like there ain't no snakes around.
So, I don't know if I made the joke. Damn sense to me.
I'm not going to lie. That's partially the reason I asked you guys what you guys, your sleeping arrangements are like, tents, whatnot, hammocks.
I got a floorless teepee.
Wow. You got balls, son.
It's just like I said, do what makes you comfortable.
Yeah. I know I made the comment to my dad. I don't know if I made it to Newman, but like I would just walk into the woods, take a leak if I had to at camp. And I'm like, this is when I'm going to get bit by a snake because I'm out here in my Crocs, you know, don't have Croc gaiters on. I'm sure they make an attachment these days, and I would walk like 10, 15 feet, you know, away from camp into the woods. And I'm like, yep. This is how it's going to happen if it happens. Yeah. I'm going to die in camp taking a leak.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I guess it's not really complacency, but I mean, like I've seen more copperheads like literally within 3 feet of my house in the last several years than I have anywhere else. And so now, like anytime I go in those areas where I know they could be, like I'm looking out for them, but I'm not wearing snake gaiters around the house. And I tell you, and Mark, you said it on one of our past hunts, maybe it was over the summer, but like, the snake gaiters now, my main purpose of wearing those is I can bust through stuff and not tear up my legs. You know, I'm not as worried about snakes. It just provides protection, you know.
What are you wearing for boots with your snake gaiters?
Hiking boots.
Regular hiking boots.
Either hiking boots or I've now, these last couple hunts, been wearing some Sims wading boots and just some socks because I'm going to get wet.
Oh, so that's probably a perfect move. Wear your wading boots with a pair of neoprene socks or something.
Yeah, so we went on a hunt down there mid-January, and it was low 30s in the morning. And so I had like some 5 mil neoprene socks on.
Yeah.
And we walked around for an hour, and I was about to rip those things off. They were so hot. So yeah. I got to do some experimenting. I know Sims makes some wet wading socks that
they do.
They're socks, but they dry quickly. So I think that might be the route that I go.
Yeah.
Assuming they don't wear blisters, but yeah, just something that drains quick. I've worn like my hunting boots, like leather, you know, just over the ankle hunting boots, which are the most comfortable boots I have. They're great for walking around in, but if you get water in there, they will hold water for days and days and days and never dry out. So that's, you know, you just have to accept that you're going to be wearing wet boots or have something that like my son wears just Merrells that drains pretty quick too. And I know that's what Mark, you know, wears something like that too.
Here's full on inexperience. You guys are wearing regular hiking boots with snake gaiters. Do the snakes not bite your feet?
Tell them go high.
Seriously. I mean, like, are you negotiating with the snake prior to the bite? I mean, how's this work out?
Hey, so check it out, right? Everybody talks about snakes, right? And I tell everybody, do what makes you feel comfortable. But I made a phone call down there, and I said, hey, to the hospital, the local hospital. I said, how many snake bites come off that place in the last 3 years? They couldn't tell me.
Are you serious? You made the call?
Yeah.
I feel like you're bullshitting us.
Okay, roger that. I don't have nothing to bullshit about.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's hard to, it's not like it's a hard phone call to make, right? I know who to call. I know where to call. I lived down there for 6 years. So it's not, I mean, do what makes you feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. You said that a million times and it makes sense. It definitely makes
Chris,
sense.
You saw that snake that Brad and them saw. I mean, it was, you know, as big around as my thigh. And yeah. It was just sitting there. Like that's, you know, if you do see one, the chances of them ever being aggressive, I think, was it Earl? Somebody said they stepped on or they stepped over a log and they felt something squirt out from underneath their foot. I can't remember who that was, but somebody thought they didn't see it, but they thought they had stepped on a snake too. And again, like chances are, even if you're that close, they're going to try and get the hell out of there. Obviously they can turn around and snipe and, you know, try and bite you.
It's all about mitigating risk, right? Mitigating the risk and what makes you feel comfortable. But like that snake that Brad showed you, right? That son of a bitch could hit you in the thigh.
Yeah, that's true.
What if a rattlesnake's laying on top of a palmetto? Ask anybody who's been down here for a lot and see if there's not been a rattlesnake laid up in a palmetto or on a stump or something above your boot.
James Wood posted a video.
James Wood just posted the video. It was with a snake, it was shoulder high, right?
Yep.
What kind of snake was that? Because I didn't have the volume.
He said it was a black snake. I don't know what a black snake is.
It looked like a black racer, but I'm not so sure, but it looked like a black racer.
Yeah, I didn't have the audio when I watched the video.
I feel bad. I can't remember the gentleman that was there with him.
Al Chapman.
Yes, thank you.
Yep.
He still didn't feel, in the video, he didn't look super pleased that he was asking him to get closer for the video.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you get closer, please?
Oh, Lord. I don't do snakes. I mean, whatever. Snakes are snakes, whatever, but...
They don't want anything to do with us.
Well, no, the spiders is what weird me out more.
When Mark and I were talking prior to the hunt, he's like, man, I need to take stock in snake stuff before these hunts.
It's out there, but it comes down there.
Boots down there, selling them.
Holy crap. Selling your campsite.
Set up, Mark.
Yeah, raise your campsite.
If it becomes something I do regularly, which I'm hoping it is, I think if I feel the need to continue to wear gaiters, I'm going to buy a snake. Like, I'd rather buy like the Rocky snake boots Jason wears.
Yeah.
Because the gaiters are cumbersome.
I mean, that's what my wife wears. My wife wears Rocky snake boots. There's a pair laying over here right now, and she wears them every time I go to the woods. That's just what makes me feel comfortable.
The gaiters make sense, though, with what Newman's doing with the wading boots. That's a slick idea. I like that.
I think
those Rockies drain pretty good, though. I had them for years. I wasn't pig hunting in them, but. They didn't fit my feet all that great, so I wouldn't want to put a lot of miles on them. But I know a lot of people have had really good success with them.
For me, Chris, I was wearing a pair of Keen hiking boots,
mm-hmm.
and I found all I had to do was change socks. Like, even if my feet got soaked, it was the sock that stayed wet.
Yeah.
The inside of the boot was actually fairly dry, so as long as I change socks, even putting my feet right back into the boots, it's not like that new sock instantly felt damp.
Yeah, and actually, Chris, I haven't hunted in them yet, but so I told you, like, those neoprene socks were getting really hot, but also, you know, they hold water when you get them wet.
They do.
So I took, when I got home from this last hunt, I heated up a nail just with a torch, and I poked, like, three holes right on the instep of them. So I'm hoping they drain, too. I'm going to see how that works. I don't know.
That's an interesting idea, yeah. I have a pair I wear for in the summer when we're fishing out of the kayaks, and yeah, they hold water. They hold water bad.
But I mean, I posted that one picture. I think we were 10 minutes into the hunt on the very first morning, and I'd already gone up to my pockets on my pants.
And took his phone out though, didn't you?
I did. Yeah.
Sorry, actually, Brad.
I got a waterproof case for my phone too, just in case.
Nice.
But yeah,
Brad didn't.
No, Brad did not. What a good story. What a good story.
But we're already pushing an hour here. So, Newman, we should probably get into the excitement of the following day.
That was the end of day two, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so day three, again, we kind of made a plan. And also, I'll just say, and Sheriff, you can tell your dad this too, Jack was like, he really wanted to hunt with you guys. And the same thing with you, Mark. He was like, yeah, I really want to hunt with those guys. But again, Mark had all his cronies around him too. So
I my favorite part was, you know, Mark kept telling me, I like to hunt solo. I like to hunt solo. And he was like, come on, get in the truck, guys. We can fit eight. I think we can fit nine even.
Does he have a fan club?
So I'll say
Mark
that,
shared a seatbelt. You should have seen it. It was cute.
And he's calling me, and he was picking on me earlier there in that text.
Yeah.
Dude.
Hey, I do say that, right? I always tell everybody, hey, this is a big boy hunt, right? I'm not there to be your guide.
If I didn't have to edit this.
Usually, most of the time, I don't do that. And I tell you, from this point on, if I want to hunt by myself, I'm going to go down there by myself.
Yeah.
But half the damn fun was hanging out with all those dudes. I met some amazing people. And just to get to see guys who never seen a pig, like when Stuart stepped on that black hog and it bust out from underneath him in less than 15 yards, dude, like the look on his face. I mean, like from this point on, if I'm really seriously, like I'm really down there just to hunt by myself, that's what I'm going to do. I'll go down by myself. I won't tell nobody. But from this point on, like the amazing people I got to hang out with, oh man, it was a hoot.
Yeah. And I'll agree with that too. And like, you know, I think, especially at this point, if Mark and I go out and hunt together, it's like, it's game time. It's business. We're probably not even really talk much once we're out there. But like when me and Jack and Schaefer and his dad were out there, like we were stump shooting pine cones along the road, like having a good time and, you know, yeah. And like not goofing off, but you know what I mean? It's exactly what Mark's saying. That is a lot of fun. I had that exact same thought. I was like, man, I would love to like see Schaefer get on a pig, you know, or like,
yeah.
And, like watch that happen. Cause having seen it, like with my son, seeing anybody who's never done it before, you know, it is, it's a ton of fun.
I thought Schaefer didn't hang out with you, hung out with me. He'd been on a pig.
He would have been, although we were on pigs both times we hunted together. So in my defense,
well, Newman was,
you were there.
Schaefer was in a minute of pigs.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh god.
So, let's see. The third day we go up kind of in the same area, same general vicinity where we had seen that pig the night before. And we go and we again, I'm looking for like the broom grass and pine trees. We find a good spot, go walk around, don't see anything. The wind was horrible. We ran into another, I think it was a rifle hunter that was up there too. We saw just an orange vest going through the trees, like across this giant field. So we walked around for, I don't know, 45 minutes. And then we came back and did some pine cone shooting and walked down another little trail. And we saw like on the edge of this field, there was good, relatively fresh sign. But again, like that doesn't really necessarily mean anything. And so we got back to the truck, hopped in the truck, the other hunter that we had seen, he drives past us. And, so I turn around and we started driving down the road and maybe went 50 yards, 100 yards and a, sow darted across the road, like right in front of us. And so kind of same scenario as before, although I didn't slam my door, we hop out of the truck, grab the bows and where it was, it had gone into like this opening, kind of big pines, standing pines, Schaefer and palmettos. And,
forgot about
and
that.
And then it hooked right into this pretty thick swamp. And the swamp wasn't huge. It was maybe 50 yards wide, but it was kind of long going in the same direction it had gone. And we saw, Jack and I both saw where it had gone in. And so we go and try and follow it. And we got maybe 10 yards into where it had gone in. And it was like, okay, if we're going to keep following this thing, we got to go like hands and knees. There was no way we're getting through. And it's kind of like what Mark was saying earlier. It's like, and we both looked at each other and I think he may have even said, he's like, we're not gonna be able to shoot in there. I'm like, yeah, you're right. So we backed out, we kind of walked down a little further to see if maybe it'd come back out more in the open, but we just kind of chalked it up to, well, you know, saw one, but lost it, you know, we'll try again. And we got back to the truck and I was like, you know what, Jack, let me go see if it just happened to like squirt out the other side of the swamp. Cause like I said, it wasn't super wide. So I back up, I hop out to where we're on the other side of the swamp. And just start pushing. And luckily the wind was kind of blowing towards the truck. So I was going into the wind and Jack stayed in the truck and I was like, let me just go see if I see anything over here. And walking through, it's actually like really open. There's hardly any trees. And I get up and coming out of the swamp, I see this black movement coming through these trees. And same thing, I'm like, holy crap, there's a pig. And so I knock an arrow, and it's going through this, like, it almost looks like a drainage ditch. Like, it kind of connected this swamp and the one to the right of it. And it's just rooting around again, never stopping. Right. And I get up, it was probably 20 to 25 yards somewhere in that neighborhood. But I thought for a second, I was like, okay, I can get closer. Cause it was definitely preoccupied. I know the wind was good. His head was down. And I didn't realize it till later on when I started thinking about it. I was like, this is not the same. It wasn't the same pig that crossed the road. It was one that we probably bumped out of that swamp when we were trying to find that sow. Cause this one was a pretty decent size boar. But I basically just said, I was like, you know what? I can try to get closer, but like I had the thought, I was like, I can make this shot. And like I said, it was probably 25-ish yards, maybe a little less than that. And he's rooting around, slightly quartering away, draw, shoot, see the arrow go like right where I want it to, like mid-body, like right, either right in or just a hair behind the shoulder. And the pig just starts raising hell. He starts spinning in circles like 3 or 4 times, you know, almost like a bucking bronco. And then he juts, like, sprints off back into the swamp where he came. And I freeze and I listen and I hear him crash through the woods, like, to get into the swamp. And then probably another 20 yards, 15, 20 yards in, I hear another crash that I thought, I was like, okay, that kind of sounds like it went down. You know, when you hear a deer crash, I was like, that's probably good. And I whipped out my compass, took a bearing to figure out, okay, here was a line of travel, because I knew, since we'd already come in from the other side, I was like, it's going to be ugly trying to get in there. But I got an idea of, okay, here's the direction he's going. I'm calling Jack, who's back sitting in the truck. I'm texting him, no answer, no answer, no answer, no answer. And I think that's at the point where I started. I was like, okay, well, there was blood right where I'd shot it, where it was spinning around. The arrow was a clean pass through. It was stuck in the other side of the ditch. And again, like where the height of the arrow was, it kind of like confirmed, okay, you were pretty much either mid to like kind of the top of the lower third of the body. So like all good. The arrow didn't have a lot of blood on it, which kind of made me a little worried. And I joked with Mark later. I was like, man, I rubbed that thing up and down my nose to smell for guts. And like, it didn't stink. So like, okay, well, that's a good sign. You know, I didn't get it in the guts. And especially the way it reacted, I was like, that thing was hurt. You know, I hurt it pretty good. And so I marked it and I started going into the swamp, searching around. At this point, I think I'm texting you, Schaefer, letting you guys know.
I just happened to text you asking if you had any luck at the right time.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. But I was trying to bust through there and I saw like there was blood at the site. There was blood like a couple feet after that, but it wasn't very much. It was good looking blood. It was like good red, you know, not like dark blood, but it was good blood. It wasn't bubbly or anything like that. So it didn't look like long, but, so I finally, I think I asked you, Schaefer, I was like, grab Jack, because he's not answering me. And then that's when I met up with you guys.
Jack's guide service was a little bit off on the initial direction of travel. Because I get a text from Newman. He sends me a waypoint. And he said, have Jack show you where I went in, and I'll meet you there. So I'm like, I look at the waypoint. I'm like, all right. And then Jack starts directing us in. I'm like, okay. That waypoint looks like it's in the middle of that thick stuff. So clearly he's going to come out probably roughly on the same, you know, east to west line, so to speak. But that we had the wrong side of the thick stuff.
Yeah. I come out in the open. I'm looking for them. They're looking for me. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to make an owl call. Just come towards the owl call. And I'm sitting there looking at the swamp, waiting for them to come out. Cause I was like, okay, they must've like, cause I figured maybe Schaefer just went straight to the waypoint that I sent him, which really was like dead center of the swamp. And, I was like, okay, well I'll grab them coming out. And then I turn around and they were coming from like 180 degrees from where, where I figured they were going.
It was when we started backtracking Newman, I was listening for the owl call the whole time. I'm like, man, he said he was going to make an owl call. Like, we got to be close.
I was calling this direction and you guys were over here.
And at this point, we're already in like just above ankle deep water, just to give some details to the story here.
Yeah. But anyway, we met up. We looked. I think you guys, the four of us, looked for an hour-ish, something like that. And I think I probably put in another hour. It was right around 2 hours total from the time that I shot it. And I mean, some of that stuff, and Schaefer can attest to this, we could have walked right next to a dead pig and never known it.
Well, I sent Newman a text after. I'm like, I'm sorry it wasn't more help. Like, the idea of fanning out in there to, like, yeah, grid search, I'd just be pushing the saplings in the way of Newman.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
It was kind of worst case scenario, honestly. And all I can figure going back, and, you know, I'm of course now trying to figure out, okay, what went right, what went wrong, and all those kind of things. I'm still, like, very confident in the shot, that it was a shot that, you know, I should have taken, I would take it again. But I think, so after looking at enough pictures of this stupid thing, you know, the lungs are high and forward and kind of slanted. That heart is low and forward, and they kind of form like a little V, where the liver is kind of in that V. I am, like, very confident that it was probably a liver shot, and it was either just above the heart or just below the lungs, or it was a lethal shot. I'm pretty dang sure, but not quick enough. And I know, like, Mark, when we got back to camp and I told you that whole story, like, Mark just looked me right in the face. He said, "That's a dead pig." And I was like, well, that's good to know, but you know, I sure wish we could have found it.
Yeah. It was like, you'd go through a layer of thick stuff, and then at this point you're in water, like, you know, and it's not like nice water. It's like a dead pig's not going to show up in this water. And then you'd get out of the thick stuff into that water, it just get worse. And yeah, grid searching is next to impossible in there, practically.
That's
tough. Where, yeah, you know, it sucks. And that's where, like we were talking about earlier, I got back and I was like, you know, I kind of wish I had that third blade on that broadhead.
Never know what you may have tagged.
Exactly.
All right. Three blades it is.
Well, so, Chris, it's kind of like your story from this past November. He was like, you don't know what would have happened if you had a third blade.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, you could make the argument it's better for the animal not to have the third blade, because, like, maybe instead of it being lethal, it's just a wound. But
I think I'm switching, though. I think I'm switching to him this year. I'm going to try him for a season.
I mean, from my experience, I'm telling you, I mean, like I said, everybody does their own thing, but I'm shooting four blades from here on out. Yeah. Minimum.
Well, yeah, I'm going to give it hell and see what happens.
Like I said, 25-ish yards. I think it was my PCH, so I was, you know, pulling like 48 pounds, like moderate weight arrow, not 50, super heavy.
58-inch bow?
60.
Okay.
Yeah. You were dead nuts, though, Newman. That morning, you're like, changing up to the PCH, see if it changes the luck.
Yeah.
It did some ways.
But I mean, it, you know, like I said, it zipped right through. I mean, it was stuck 8 inches into the dirt on the other side of that ditch. So it's, you know.
I would love to see these pigs. I mean, I'm not doubting what people are saying either, but, like, you always hear pigs are, like, these super hard animals to penetrate into. And I'm like, I don't know if they're Texas pigs, or I want to know where those pigs are just in general. Cause, like, everything I've seen, at least where we were, it doesn't seem like you need much.
Yeah.
Or nothing overly complicated.
Not to change subjects, but, after seeing all the pictures that Eric shared from the Davis Mountains and the PBS hunt down there,
that does look fun too.
Dang, I want to hunt down there.
Yeah,
that place looks sick. So regardless of whether it be Georgia or the Davis Mountains, I think clearly pig hunting is a good time, and I think we've covered that in the last two episodes, and I think we'll all be doing it next year. Correct.
I mean, it'd be nice if you weren't speaking theoretically, Chris.
It's game on. Exactly. Yeah, I'm not going to be down there this summer, but I'll be down there in February, definitely, for sure.
We also have spring and fall.
I talked about it, like, and then some of the other guys brought it up. Maybe we do it a little bit before, that way the passes are still good.
Yeah.
I would love... January is such a dead month up here. Like, February, you're starting to come out of the winter thing. So January would be an excellent time, but...
I'd be cool with that.
I was a big fan, Mark, how you teamed it up with a holiday for us who have to travel, you know?
Right.
That's it. I don't get that holiday, so whatever.
Well, I mean, what do you got in January? You got
Martin Luther King Day.
Martin Luther King Day is.
Do you get that one too, or no? You do, don't you?
I work for the town. I get all the holidays.
I get Martin Luther King Day. If you want to pull it off somewhere around there, that'd be awesome. You know, I promise it's not a PBS hunt, but whatever.
Well, that's the thing on the PBS hunt. It's not, the dates are not locked in. In the magazine, I got it open dates.
Martin Luther King Day weekend.
So that's the reason why I did it too. Because I always just ask, hey, who wants to do it? Whoever.
I'll take Thursday, Friday off, and we'll hunt through Sunday and then come home Monday.
Perfect.
Thursday, Monday travel days. Can you hunt? You can hunt Sundays, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chris, the trip for you should be, I mean, I guess this is somebody that travels a lot, but from your place down, it was easy. Probably 14.
Is that what it is, 14?
Well, we had 22 hours in on the, took us 24 hours to get down there and 22 on the way back. And 2 hours of that was sleeping on the way back. And your place is 5.5 hours from mine. And I would assume we went the same way you would go, roughly.
12 and a half hours to the visitor site.
14 with stopping.
With piss breaks and food.
Yeah.
That's doable. As long as I got a co-pilot, that's doable.
Roll with it.
Martin Luther King Day weekend. Just saying, Mark.
Hey, I'm in.
Let's do it. Martin Luther King Day this past year.
All right, that's being said. All right, it's Sunday night. I got to wrap this up a little bit early, but what do you guys think? Did we cover everything? Are we missing anything? Anything we need to go back on and talk about?
I'll finish up this quick story, but the guys who hunt with me know that, like Newman said, the owl, right? The owl hoot, right? That's like, we hoot. That's how we, like, you know, we're not hollering, hey, I'm over here, like a hoot, right? So we do an owl hoot, just a locator, and then we crow call if you're on pigs, right? Well, I'm not going to say who because it's their story, but those boys can't hoot for a damn, right? So they got on a set of pigs, and it sounded like a set of beagles running through the woods instead of a bunch of owl hoots.
We had, at one point, Jack and I had split up. I can't remember if this was on the last day before we came back or what, but I had seen – either I had seen pigs or I had seen an area where I was trying to get his attention. So I owl hooted, and again, like nothing, no response. And I came back up to him. I was like, dude, did you hear me? He was like, hear you what? I was like, I was owl hooting. He was like, oh, I thought that was just an owl over there. I was like.
Yeah, so. Hey, not everybody knows how to owl hoot. And I'm like, how do these boys turkey hunt? Like, I mean, like, how's this work? But them boys, they got on pigs, and they were running them down. And it sounded like if owl hooting, it sounded like a pile of beagles chasing pigs through the woods.
I want to give a shout out to Jack too. I was impressed with his ability to just wander off by himself and show back up, because Jack, it's thick down there.
Yeah,
there's a few times where, like, I'd see him walk off and I'm like looking at Newman like, really, like, are you not nervous, like, still doing your thing?
It's Jack.
He's been running around with me since he was probably 6 or 7. So I can be like, he doesn't have the greatest sense of direction. He's pretty good about just going back where he came from though. And on, let's see, I guess actually during that TBG hunt, we were trying to, again, outflank a pig that I had seen, and we got split up, and it got to the point now where, like, I wasn't worried about him, but it was taking me longer than I thought it should have to find him, because he had kind of like veered off in a different direction than what I anticipated him doing. But then I reminded him of the owl hoot. And then I also said, I was like, hey man, when we get back to the truck, I got a whistle back there. I'm going to give you this whistle. You know, like, if you really hit the point where you're like, oh crap, just blow on that whistle and I'll come find you.
Yeah. Hey, he can outshoot us all.
He absolutely can. I tell him that all the time. I was like, if he even just like halfway practice, he could outshoot every single one of us.
Wonderful.
Love it. All right. Before we wrap it up, I got to announce that we're going to be having a giveaway coming up with Laurel Mountain Outfitters. Ryan and I have been talking, and there's something in the works here. So stay tuned for that. And also, if you're a person that uses testers like myself, make sure you shoot over to Laurel Mountain and check out the Seek Hole Special, the holds your shit paint organizer. It's pretty sweet. We got to cover anything else. Anything else we're missing, Schaefer? Anything coming up that we need to announce? I think we got it.
I think that's pretty solid.
Yeah. So we got a giveaway coming up. It'll be in the works. The code, the thing for
VPA?
Yeah. That's still up, right?
Yeah, we still have a code for VPA. I mean, we talked about them a lot on this podcast.
Yeah.
I think it's Broken Arrow 10.
Yeah. So if you're in the market off for some three blades, give VPA a shout.
Or a sweet riser.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. There's Newman's riser. Very cool. VPA. Somebody else posted a picture using a VPA riser today.
I told them I was going to mention this because I've been, actually, I know Mark has too, but been searching for a compact pig hunter.
Those are 13-inch risers.
Yeah, they're smaller risers.
I had all but given up because nothing suits a 30-plus inch draw.
Yeah. They do have a
medium UCA limbs because of the limb angle that they put on that riser.
Yeah.
It shoots sweet, 56-inch bow.
They do have a 17-inch in the works, I believe, also. Check out VPA for some broadheads. Use that code and look out for that giveaway from Lower Mountain. Guys, thank you so very much for hanging out with us tonight and talking about pigs.
Absolutely.
Peace.
All right, fellas.
Awesome. Real quick before we go, just want to take a moment and thank our partner Black Widow Bows, along with Addictive Archery, Safari Tough, Great Northern Quivers, and Laurel Mountain Outfitters. Also, if you have a moment, please take the time to leave us a review. It really helps us out. On top of that, I just want to thank everyone for listening. Hope you enjoyed, and best of luck out there.